All right, open your Bibles this morning to Jeremiah chapter 16. Jeremiah chapter 16, and while you're going there, Shabbat Shalom and Chag Sameach. Today is the first day of the seventh biblical month, the first day of the seventh biblical month. Today is known as Yom Teruah, the day of a blast, if you will. There's a great article that James Tabor just wrote and posted on Facebook. I encourage you to read that. And in fact, I have the ability to multitask here. I'm going to prove that. I had this pulled up, and as soon as my screen catches up, I'm going to paste that link in so that you can read it. It's some really good reading on today. Today is traditionally Rosh Hashanah, the new year, and Dr. Tabor explains those two ideas very well in his article. So I'm going to post that link here and you can read it. Not now, though. Read it after the class. I want you paying close attention. Today, I'm going to begin with a prophecy of Jeremiah. We are in class number 7 of my Torah series. And what I intend to begin to do today is show you that Jeremiah, the prophet, is a key to understanding the content of the Moses Scroll. Without Jeremiah, we're not going to be able to piece together the elements that comprise the Moses Scroll. He becomes the key. His prophecies are so important, and this particular prophecy that I'll begin with today in Jeremiah 16 is just a nugget, if you will, just an example to show you that Jeremiah has before him the Moses Scroll. He has internalized it, as you'll see, in a very real and meaningful way. And the words that he speaks are based solidly on the Moses Scroll. So I want to talk about a particular prophecy in Jeremiah chapter 16, but before I get into the actual words of the prophecy, I want to tell you a couple of things. Number one, the prophecy that I will begin with today is so important that he repeats it. He does it in Jeremiah chapter 16, and he speaks the same words in Jeremiah chapter 23. It is essential. And it's somewhat shocking. I can imagine the hearers of his day as he uttered this burden, as he spoke this word of Jehovah. What I had not seen until I got into this particular study, into this series, is how closely it indicates, or how clearly it indicates, that he is solidly basing his words, if you will, on a very ancient scroll. So in Jeremiah chapter 16, it begins, just to give you a little bit of background, it begins with a word from Jehovah to Jeremiah. And this particular word to Jeremiah sets Jeremiah on a course for the life that he has been given by the Creator, a life like so many other prophets that he didn't ask for, one that certainly wasn't very comfortable, but nonetheless, he's been given this incredible burden. And so in Jeremiah chapter 16, the chronological order of things in Jeremiah, as you will learn throughout the course of this series, is not following the natural order. In other words, things are moved around a little bit. So what I'm going to propose to you today is that this particular chapter is very early to prepare him for some things that are coming. Namely, he's told, you are not to marry. You're not to marry, and you're not to have children. Now, all of you who are familiar with Jewish tradition understand that this is very important. In fact, I hear teachers say all the time that no Jewish man of importance was single in the biblical period. The people that say that clearly have never read the Bible. Or at least they've never read Jeremiah chapter 16. So Jeremiah chapter 16 begins, don't marry, don't have children, and he gives a very specific reason for that. Now, in Jewish tradition, it's important that you understand, and this is later, I believe, than the time of Jeremiah 16, but it reflects an earlier idea that Jewish tradition says that a man ought to be married. In fact, he ought to be married and within his power seek to raise a family. This is based on Genesis chapter 1 and 28, a duty of man. The first thing that God tells Adam is be fruitful and multiply and bear children and so forth. And this idea is so contrary. But nonetheless, he tells Jeremiah, your lot is different. You're not to marry. In fact, he goes on to tell Jeremiah, sons and daughters that are born in this place, and the mothers and fathers who bring them into this place are going to die grievous deaths. So he's got a mission for Jeremiah. You don't have time, Yirmiyahu. You have committed yourself to a path of expressing my words to the people. And Jeremiah, you can't be married. You can't have children. In fact, those who do, their children will die. They're not even be lamented or mourned. Rather, those who die in the coming catastrophes that are coming to pass will be as dung on the earth, consumed by sword and famine. Imagine hearing these words. Jeremiah is told that you will witness the worst of times. You will be there to supervise and to oversee the worst of the worst. The carcasses of those who die will be food for the birds of the air and beasts of the field. Further, Jeremiah is told that he can't even enter into a house of mourning to lament or bemoan those who die in what is coming. Jehovah tells Jeremiah that he has removed his peace from this people, and he underscores it by saying both love and mercy. Imagine a world in which the peace of Jehovah is not present. There is no love and there is no mercy. What Jehovah tells Jeremiah is that that is what is coming. Young and old will die, not be buried, not be mourned. And those who do lose loved ones won't even be consoled, because the trouble is so great that one, his own troubles are so incredible that they can't even console others who are suffering. You see, because what we're witnessing in the days of Jeremiah is that a decree has been enacted. A particular pronouncement has been made, a promised consequence that was spoken of many, many hundreds and hundreds of years ago was soon to be coming to pass, to fruition. It's horrible news when you read Jeremiah and you understand the setting of these days. The voice of mirth, the voice of gladness would not be heard. Nowhere in the streets would be heard the voice of a bride and a bridegroom. And you might ask why. I want to begin this morning in Jeremiah chapter 16 and verse 10. Jeremiah 16, verse 10, and it shall come to pass, this is the word of Jehovah, by the way, when you shall tell this people all these words, the words which I just told you, and they shall say to you, why has Jehovah pronounced all this great evil against us? And what is our iniquity? And you shall say to them, because your fathers have forsaken me, says Jehovah, and have walked after other gods and served them, and have worshiped them, and have forsaken me, and have not kept my Torah. and you have done worse than your fathers. For behold, you walk everyone after the stubbornness of his evil heart, that they may not hearken to me. Therefore will I cast you out of this land into another land that you know not, neither you nor your fathers, and there you shall serve other gods day and night, for I will show you no favor. Jeremiah will often be referred to as the weeping prophet. He at times expresses his great displeasure to Jehovah for choosing him. There are times where, like in Jeremiah 9, he just wants to go away. He wants to go away to the wilderness and open a hotel just to get away for two reasons. One, he doesn't want to witness the horrors that are coming. He just wants to get out from under the burden of Jehovah. But then he says the following. And by the way, after pronouncing this, there's a white space. I want you to notice the difference, the vast difference as I resume reading after the white space. This is another word. Jeremiah chapter 16, verse 14. Behold, days are coming, says Jehovah, when it shall no more be said, as Jehovah lives, that brought up the children of Israel out of the land of Egypt. Now, I want you to pause there before we read the rest of it, because I want to establish a point. This ought to shock readers of the Bible. What Jeremiah says is that the very thing for which Jehovah is known is the exodus from Egypt. It was through this great act that Jehovah gained a name for himself. So people read over this text and they miss the significance, but I want you to get it. No longer will it be said, Jehovah lives, who brought the children of Israel up from the land of Egypt. That's not going to be spoken anymore. Now, this is an oath. I want you to notice that there is within this prophecy in verse Jeremiah 16, 14, this is an oath. Whenever you see in the Hebrew Bible, Jehovah Chai, or as the English translates it, as Jehovah lives, or as the Lord lives. This is an oath. So he's saying, no longer will an oath be made based on the sure foundation of Jehovah rescuing or saving or bringing his people up out of the land of Egypt. The Exodus, as we know it, will no longer be the basis of an oath. You see the significance of this? In fact, look with me in Deuteronomy chapter 4, just to make this point. I just want to spot read a few things from Deuteronomy chapter 4. Go with me to verse 32, because Moses calls the exodus from Egypt this great thing. Jeremiah says you won't even talk about this anymore. So listen to how important this is. Deuteronomy 4:32, ask now of the days that are past, which were before you since the day that God created man upon the earth and from one side of heaven to the other, whether there has been any such thing as this great thing or whether anything has been heard like it. Look down at verse 34. Has God ventured to go and take him a nation from the midst of another nation by trials, by signs, by wonders, by war, and by a mighty hand, and a stretched out arm, and by great terrors, according to all that Jehovah your God did before you in Egypt before your eyes? There's never been anything like it. And Jeremiah says, days are coming. Days are coming, yamim ba'im, when no longer will it be said that God brought Israel out of Egypt. this great thing, the thing for which God is known. Now, the reason I wanted to begin with this is because I will show you from this point to illustrate, and I'll also begin indicating in other ways that Jeremiah is getting this idea not only from a word of Jehovah, but from a scroll. He is speaking a word and teaching things and pronouncing things that he has learned from a very specific text. In fact, the phrase, children of Israel out of Egypt, that's pretty specific, right? Children of Israel out of Egypt. That particular phrase occurs 7 times. I want you to go quickly. We're going to go through these just so I can show you the wording in the Hebrew, what Jeremiah uses in Jeremiah 16, 14. He says, no longer will this be said. Those words that he uses are found in these verses. Exodus chapter 6. Exodus chapter 6 and verse 13. Exodus 6, 13. And Jehovah spoke to Moses and Aaron and gave them a charge to the children of Israel and to Pharaoh, king of Egypt, to bring the children of Israel out of the land of Egypt. Okay? So this is going to be the first one. Look at verse 26. These are that Aaron and Moses to whom Jehovah said, bring out the children of Israel from the land of Egypt. Chapter 7, verse 4. But Pharaoh will not listen to you, that I may lay my hand on Egypt and bring out my armies, my people, the children of Israel, out of the land of Egypt. Chapter 12, verse 51. I'm just going to give you these so I can move forward. Chapter 12 of Exodus, verse 51. Chapter 13 of Exodus, verse 18. Chapter 19 and verse 1 of the book of Exodus. And Numbers chapter 33, verse 38, all say, no longer will it be said, the children of Israel out of the land of Egypt. That particular phrase. Now, there are many other passages which indicate through close wording, but I believe, in other words, there are other texts which refer to Israel and Egypt and Israel coming out of Egypt. But I mean the phrase, B'nai Yisrael me'eretz Mitzrayim, exactly, is only found in the book of Exodus and the book of Numbers. So when you look at that exact phrase, Jeremiah is referring to 7 passages which will no longer be spoken. Now, some people might think presently at this point in my talk that I'm making more of this than should be made. But I urge you to watch and follow closely at what comes later. He repeats this phrase, this prophecy in Jeremiah 16, verse 14. He repeats it in Jeremiah 23, 7, verbatim. Now I want you to look with me at chapter 16 of Jeremiah and verse 15. Jeremiah 16 and verse 15. Well, let me go ahead and read verse 14 again to complete the prophecy. Therefore, verse 14, behold, days are coming, says Jehovah, when it will no more be said, as Jehovah lives, that brought up the children of Israel out of the land of Egypt, but as Jehovah lives, that brought up the children of Israel from the land of the north and from the lands, all the lands into which he had driven them. And I will bring them back into their land that I gave to their fathers. Now, the point is, there will be an oath. There will be an oath in Yamim Baim, in the days to come, but it will not be based upon the wording found in those passages from Exodus and Numbers. The children of Israel from the land of Egypt. Rather, the oath will be about Jehovah concerning his bringing up, not from the land of Egypt, but from the north country and out of all the countries where he had driven them. Now, just so you know, Jeremiah cannot be basing this second part of the prophecy on Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, or Numbers, because nowhere in those books does it have anything to do with a redemption from the north country and out of all the countries where he had driven them. Where could Jeremiah get this word? Now, one thought could be, and probably is by many who don't recognize underlying the language being used here, there could be someone that said, well, Jehovah just spoke the word to him, and that's where he got it. There's no textual support for Jeremiah's claim that a new oath is coming in days to come. But that's why you're here today. Because today, I'm going to show you that Jeremiah finds the source for this prophecy from the words of a scroll. Indeed, Jeremiah is a prophet. He is speaking what he speaks on the authority and by a declaration of Jehovah, a word being to him. But I'm going to show you that this particular oath that will come in days to come from Jeremiah 16:15 is part of an oath that was declared long before Jeremiah's days. Its language, its vocabulary, and the content can be found in a scroll that was written by the hand of Moses. I'm going to show you something quite incredible over the next several weeks from the text of the Bible, from the words, in connection with the words, and on the basis of the words. Jeremiah's source for these prophecies and the book of Jeremiah is the scroll. It was there, this prediction that Jeremiah mentions in 16:15 was there all alone. In a scroll that was lost, hidden away, it wasn't revealed until 622 BCE. When Jehovah first called Jeremiah, go back to Jeremiah chapter 1, Jeremiah chapter 1. When he first calls him, it says, before I formed you, verse 5, before I formed you in the belly, I knew you, and before you did come out of the womb, I sanctified you. I ordained you a prophet to the nations. Now, it's important. We're going to talk about the nations for which he is to prophesy. Then I said, oh, Lord God, behold, I cannot speak, for I am a na'ar, a child, a young boy. But Jehovah said to me, say not I'm a child, for you shall go to all to whom I shall send you, and whatever I command you, you shall speak. Don't be afraid of them, for I am with you to deliver you, says Jehovah. Then Jehovah put out his hand and touched my mouth. Very literal. Jehovah said to me, behold, I have put my words in your mouth. I have set thee this day over nations and over kingdoms to root out, to pull down, to destroy, to throw down, to build, and to plant. Now this is the call of Jeremiah. Now, I want you to recognize, I mentioned it briefly last week, that the language here, my words in your mouth, are found in Deuteronomy chapter 18. Nowhere else in the Torah, as we defined it, it's only in Deuteronomy, but Deuteronomy 18 uses that very language, that the prophet speaks the words of Jehovah. He has to have the words of Jehovah in his mouth. Now, throughout the prophets, we get a picture of this. Ezekiel eats a scroll. You know, you remember this passage in Jeremiah chapter 3, and there are other passages. There's a passage in Isaiah chapter 59, verse 21, where Isaiah is told that he will have, these words will not depart from your mouth or the mouth of your seed or your seed seed. So the words in the mouth are indicative of the status of the prophet based on Deuteronomy. But what I want to tell you is that this putting the words in comes in a variety of ways. Eating God's words, I want to prove to you that Jeremiah had a specific diet. The words that he ate were the words of the Moses scroll. Go with me to Jeremiah chapter 15, please. Jeremiah chapter 15. And I just want to pick up a certain point out of here. If you'll go with me to verse 15, Jeremiah 15, 15. O Jehovah, you know, remember me and be mindful of me and revenge me of my persecutors. See, he's been attacked, as we'll see. His life is in the balance. He's like a sheep led to the slaughter. He becomes, in many ways, the suffering servant of his generation, the prophet like Moses, one who will be attacked on all ends. The religious leaders want to kill him. Take me not away in your long suffering. Know that for thy sake, I have suffered insult. Your words were found, and I did eat them. Now, let me make a point here. In Jeremiah's days, a scroll was found. What I'm putting forward today, beginning today, is that when the words of this scroll, when this scroll was found, it's the word of Jehovah by the hand of Moses, and it is these words that were eaten. Do you see this? Nowhere else in Scripture does it talk about the finding of the words in this context. What Jeremiah will do from this point forward is everything that he does and says will be based upon the words of a scroll that he ate, figuratively. He consumed the words. What you will see is that everything for which he's called, he was set up over nations and kingdoms to root out, to pull down, to destroy, to throw down, all of that will be based upon the words that he's eaten from the scroll of Moses. And by the way, his mission to build and to plant also come from the words of a scroll that was found. They will serve, if you will, as a script for all that was demanded of him in his unique role. Now, after Moses had finished writing, we're going to go back because I want to make a few points as we build this story. When Moses had finished writing the scroll, he gave it to the Levites who carried the ark. Remember, it's a specific group. And it was to be kept as a witness against the people. I'm going to show you that this very witness and the purpose of being witness against the people will be played out, and Jeremiah will oversee that. This doesn't happen in anyone else's lifetime. Jeremiah, a prophet like Moses, will see to it that the words are brought into fruition. Go with me to Deuteronomy 31. Deuteronomy 31. And you should become very familiar with certain texts in the course of this series because they are very important to get. Verse 26, take this book of the Torah, This is the one that Moses had finished writing until the end, and put it mitzad Aaron, put it in the side of or beside the Ark of the Covenant of Jehovah your God, that it may be there for a witness against you. For I know your rebellion and your stiff neck. Behold, while I am yet alive with you this day, you've been rebellious against Jehovah. How much more after my death, says Moses. Gather to me all the elders of your tribes, your officers, that I may speak these words in their ears and call heaven and earth to witness against them. For I know that after my death, you will surely become corrupted and turn aside from the way which I've commanded you, and evil will befall you in the latter days, because you will do evil in the sight of Jehovah to provoke him to anger through the work of your hands. And Moses spoke in the ears of all the congregation of Israel the words of this poem until they were ended. Moses says, this scroll, the little scroll that Moses wrote, I want you who among the Levites who bear the Ark of the Covenant to keep this scroll as a witness against you. And then he clarifies, after I'm dead, you're going to get corrupted, you're going to be corrupt, but this scroll, the words of this scroll and a poem or a song will be there to witness against you. Jeremiah eats these words because the words of the scroll, which were to be a witness against them, was discovered again in the days of Jeremiah. I want you to look down at go back up to Jeremiah 31 and verse 16. And this is necessary foundational part. And Jehovah said to Moses, behold, you will sleep with your fathers, and this people will rise up and go astray after the gods of the strangers of the land into which they go to be among them, and will forsake me and break my covenant which I have made with them. And my anger will burn against them on that day. I will forsake them. I will hide my face from them, and they shall be devoured. Many evils and troubles shall befall them, so that they will say on that day, are not these evils come upon us because our God is not among us? And I will surely hide my face on that day from all the evils which they shall have perpetrated, in that they have turned to other gods. Now, therefore, write this poem or song for yourselves and teach it to the children of Israel. Put it in their mouths, that this poem may be a witness for me against the children of Israel. For when I shall have brought them into the land of which I swore to their fathers, one flowing with milk and honey, they shall have eaten and filled themselves and grown fat. Then they shall turn to other gods and serve them and provoke me and break my covenant. And it will come to pass, when many evils and troubles have befallen them, that this poem or this song shall testify against them as a witness, for it will not be forgotten out of the mouth of their seed, for I know their inclination and what they do, even now before I have brought them into the land which I swore. And then Moses, therefore, wrote this poem the same day and taught it to the children of Israel. The words of a scroll, the words of a poem would turn out to be a witness against Israel. These words were to be kept by a group of people, Levites in particular, who bore the ark. This particular group of people we showed last week, we made some connections with Anatot being one of the places. And I want to move today into a little more detail. I want to build on what we've covered thus far. When the Moses scroll, that ancient witness, was discovered by a priest named Hilkiah, he gave it to a scribe by the name of Shaphan, who took it straightway to Joshua and read it. Go with me to 2 Chronicles 34. 2 Chronicles 34. And let's go to verse 19. And this is in context. This is when the scroll, this ancient witness, the scroll that Moses had written, when it's read in the hearing of the king, verse 19 of chapter 34, it came to pass when the king had heard the words of the Torah that he rent his clothes. And the king commanded Hilkiah and Ahikam, the son of Shaphan, and Avdon, the son of Micha, and Shaphan the scribe, and Asiah, a servant of the king, saying, go inquire of Jehovah for me, and for those who are left in Israel and in Judah, concerning the words of the book that is found. For great is the wrath of Jehovah that is poured out upon us, because our fathers have not kept the word of Jehovah to do according to all that is written in this book. Now, understand that if you heard the words that I just read you from Deuteronomy, you would say exactly what Josiah says. There's great wrath on us because we've forsaken Jehovah and not kept his word. You see the connection. He's not ripping his garments because he's heard the stories in Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, and Numbers. That's not what has moved him. He hears words of horror and terror. Perhaps he heard, go with me to Deuteronomy 28. These are some possibilities of things that Josiah heard that moved him so greatly. Deuteronomy 28 and verse 36. Jehovah shall bring you and your king, whom you shall set over you, to a nation which neither you nor your fathers have known. And there you shall serve other gods of wood and stone. And you shall become an astonishment, a proverb, a byword among all the nations into which Jehovah shall lead you. It goes on and on and on. This idea that the king and the people would be carried away in Deuteronomy 28, verse 36, is also found in 1 Samuel 12:25. When Samuel, under pressure from the people to give them a king like the nations, whenever he acquiesces to their demands, Jehovah tells him, they've not rejected you, they've rejected me. And remember, 1 Samuel 10:25, Samuel is told to write the words concerning the king in the scroll and lay it before Jehovah. So he puts this in the scroll. Samuel does. This idea, hearing the curses such that they are, caused Josiah to rip his garments. Now, some might say, well, you know, Leviticus has curses as well. Yes, that does. But the wording and the reaction and the follow-up by King Josiah and his court indicates that the words of Deuteronomy are behind what takes place. Now, notice he's told, you go to inquire. He sends Hilkiah and this delegation to go inquire of Jehovah. Now, do you find it interesting that he does not send the entourage to Jeremiah? Remember, Jeremiah started receiving the words of Jehovah 5 years before the discovery of the scroll. So he's been a prophet of Jehovah for 5 years in 622 when the scroll's discovered. But when Josiah says, go inquire of the Lord, they don't go to Jeremiah. Go with me to 2 Chronicles 34. You need to have your bookmark in 2 Chronicles 34 and 2 Kings 22, 23, and several other places to keep up with us. But 2 Chronicles 34, verse 22, please. Hilkiah and they whom the king had appointed went to Huldah the prophetess, the wife of Shallum, the son of Tochat, the son of Chasra, keeper of the wardrobe. Now, she dwelt in Jerusalem in the second quarter. And they spoke to her. By the way, the area she's at is in between the Armenian and the Jewish quarter today. So when you're walking that route to go to the Western Wall, every time I walk that route, I always think that Huldah's place was somewhere there and that Hilkiah was in that area. So you have to think about that. Anyway, and they spoke to her to that effect. And she said to them, "Thus says the Lord God of Israel. Thus says the Lord God of Israel. Tell the man who sent you to me. Thus says Jehovah. Behold, I will bring evil upon this place and upon its inhabitants, namely, all the curses that are written in the book which they have read before the king of Judah, because they have forsaken me." Notice this consistent language here between Deuteronomy, between Jeremiah, between "and have burned incense to other gods that they might provoke me to anger with all the works of their hands. Therefore, my wrath shall be poured out upon this place and shall not be quenched. And as for the king of Judah, who sent you to inquire of Jehovah, you shall say to him," ready? "Thus says," let's see, verse 26, I want to check something out. "Thus says Jehovah, Elohei Israel, the God of Israel, concerning the words which you have heard, because your heart was submissive and you did humble yourself before God when you did hear the words, his words against this place and against its inhabitants, and did humble yourself before me and did rend your clothes and weep before me, I also have heard you, says Jehovah. Behold, I will gather you to your fathers and you shall be gathered to your grave in peace. And your eyes shall not see all the evil that I will bring upon this place and upon its inhabitants." So they brought back word to the king. That's interesting. What she says is not that your words have caused the wrath of Jehovah to be withdrawn. She does not say that these words will not come to pass. To the contrary, she said, "This place is going down. You, however, Josiah, because you've humbled yourself, you'll go to your grave. You won't have to see what's coming." So what she says is, now, Josiah has 13 years from the point of the discovery of the scroll where he will live and the bad is at bay. For 13 years, according to the chronicler in 2 Chronicles 34, 33, it says all his days, meaning Josiah's days, they, the people, departed not from following Jehovah, the God of their fathers. So it's basically like a 13-year swing to the good. But let me tell you, the pronouncement had been made. There was no turning back. In the Kings, in the book of Kings, it says there was no remedy. The end has been decreed. It was decreed long ago in a scroll that Moses wrote, a particular scroll that he wrote with his own hand and gave it to those who carry the ark and said, "Keep this as a witness against the people, and it is time for the witness to speak." But Josiah will go to his grave in peace, not in a peaceful death, because what happens is 13 years after the discovery of the scroll, King Necho, the king of Egypt, was making his way to battle. And Josiah went out to meet him. The Spirit of Jehovah, through Necho, the Egyptian, speaks to Josiah. And he says, "Why are you coming out? This has nothing to do with you. I don't want to fight with you." Josiah wouldn't back off. And according to 2 Chronicles 35, 22, he ignored the warning from the word of Jehovah through Necho, and it cost him his life. Listen, at 39 years of age, the greatest son of David, none like him before, none like him after, the one whose birth and life had been prophesied hundreds of years, and he was named. That great king, the holiest of all, died pierced by an arrow in the valley of Megiddo. Now, I want to tell you something. The valley of Megiddo, that phrase is only used two times in all of Scripture. Once to describe the death location of Josiah, and the other in a prophet by the name of Zechariah. Go with me, please, to the prophet Zechariah. Zechariah, I want you to look at chapter 12, because this phrase and the manner of death of Josiah is immortalized here. Zechariah chapter 12 and verse 10, I'll begin. "I will pour upon the house of David and upon the inhabitants of Jerusalem the spirit of grace and of supplication. They will look upon me, whom they have pierced." Now, I deviated from this translation because it is a Jewish translation and it's not literal. Basically, the speaker says, "They'll look upon me, whom they've pierced, and mourn for him as one mourns for an only son, and shall be in bitterness over him as one that is in bitterness for a firstborn. On that day shall there be a great mourning in Jerusalem, like the mourning of Hadad-Rimmon in the valley of Megiddo. And the land shall mourn apart, and the family of the house of David apart," and so forth. The mourning of one in Zechariah 12:10 can only be compared to one other event in the history of ancient Israel, and that is the deep mourning over the death of David's greatest son, Josiah, who was pierced in the valley of Megiddo. David's greatest son was now gathered to his fathers. He was gathered to his grave in peace. His eyes would not see the evil that was to come, but the evil would be coming. His life was described using words duly applied to him from the scroll that was discovered in his reign. It's a touching eulogy. Go with me to 2 Kings 23. Now, legend has it that Jeremiah penned the book of Kings. I don't know that, but I do believe that I am so in touch with Jeremiah, I feel these are his words. 2 Kings 23, verse 25. And you know me, I don't typically say, "I feel this, I feel that." I feel this. 2 Kings 23 and verse 25 says this: "And like him Was there no king before him that turned to Jehovah with all his heart and with all his soul and with all his everything? According to all the Torah of Moses, neither after him arose there any like him. This is a fitting eulogy. It comes from the words of the scroll on many levels. You'll notice it to describe this king, it says that no one, none before him. Now think of all those who are before him. What about Hezekiah? None like him. What about after him? None like him. Because he turned to Jehovah with all his heart, with all his soul, with all his everything. That is only used in the book of Deuteronomy. Only in Deuteronomy. According to all the Torah of Moses, which is the book that was found in his days. And there where it says, neither after him arose there any like him. Again, this is tied to language that we find in Deuteronomy 34. The language, the vocabulary is so striking. Jeremiah laments. Go with me to 2 Chronicles 35. 2 Chronicles 35. And verse 25, 2 Chronicles 35, 25. And Jeremiah lamented for Josiah. And all the singing men and the singing women spoke of Yoshiahu in their laments to this day, and made them an ordinance in Israel, and behold, they are written in the laments. This great mourning, it was so great for the one who was pierced in the valley of Megiddo. Now, go back with me to 2 Kings. 2 Kings chapter 23. 2 Kings 23. And there's a reason, like you say, well, we were just there. Why can't you organize your notes better? I know what I'm doing here probably. 2 Kings 23. We just read 25. Verse 25 about none like Josiah. But I want you to notice what comes next. Very next verse. Neither after him arose any like him. Nevertheless, verse 26, Jehovah did not turn back from the fierceness of that great anger with which his anger burned against Judah on account of all the provocations with which Manasseh had provoked him. And Jehovah said, I will remove Judah out of my sight as I have removed Israel, and will cast off this city, Jerusalem, which I have chosen, and the house which I said, my name shall be there. Now, imagine being at a funeral of the greatest king. I'm not suggesting this is the way it happened, but in the context that I just read, you say, and Josiah, may he rest in peace. None arose like him. None will be like him in the future. And then some voice in the crowd goes, nevertheless, Jehovah's wrath is not pulled back. He's still going to take everybody out. And you're like, could you just give us a minute to mourn? But a minute's not to be had. Because Jehovah's promised that Josiah will not see the evil which will come, but Josiah is resting now. He is in his grave in peace, and the evil will come. And it'll come quickly. It will come quickly, and it will come fiercely. Jehovah sends a prophet who was there in the days of Josiah. Now, we don't have a single reference to Josiah and Jeremiah ever meeting or talking. They never talked. At least we don't have a record of it. There are 18 years of overlap between the two, and we never have an episode where it says, and Josiah went before the king. We see Jeremiah going in before Jehoiakim and Zedekiah and the sons of Josiah. We even see Jeremiah criticizing one of his sons, but we never see the two together. Look at Jeremiah. Let me show you this. Look at Jeremiah 22. Jeremiah 22 and verse 15. Jeremiah 22, 15. Now, I want you to understand that what's going on here is that Jeremiah is speaking to Jehoiakim. And he says in verse 15, "Shall you reign because you do compete in cedar? Did not your father eat and drink and do judgment and justice, and then it was well with him? He judged the cause of the poor and needy, and it was well with him. Was not this to know me, says Jehovah? But you have eyes and heart only for your dishonest gain, and for shedding innocent blood, and for oppression, and for practicing violence." He's in the face. Now, what I want you to remember, Jeremiah is not some old, decrepit prophet. He's a young, robust, powerful. He comes in before the king and he says, "You, your father was a just and righteous man. You, on the other hand, think because you have nice buildings made of cedar that this will save you. It won't." From the time of Jeremiah's call, he's working from a scroll. He's working from a scroll to see to it that the kingdom comes to its decreed end. But he's following a script. It's as if the keeper of the scroll, certainly from the family of the keeper of the scroll, looks at the words before him and pronounces them to the people of his day. He speaks in the throne room. He speaks in the temple. But when he speaks from the words of the scroll which was found and which he ate, Jeremiah 15, 16. From the scroll, he saw the script that demanded an end to the kingdom of Judah and to Jerusalem. But listen to this. From the words of the same scroll, he also saw hope for the future. Proclaim those as well. Often, after pronouncing the bad, he would say, "But the Yamim Baim, Hine Yamim Baim." I can hear his voice in the streets of Jerusalem, standing in the door of the temple as he would pronounce judgment against the place. But then he would say, "Hine Yamim Baim, behold, days are coming, declares Jehovah." They wanted to kill him. He pronounced against the priest. He said, "You who handle the law, the Torah, don't know it." Because he's reading it. And he's watching their actions. And he sees discrepant behavior between the two. Jeremiah determined, based on his reading from the scroll of Moses, that a desolation was coming. And he was told by the word of Jehovah that desolation would be decreed for 70 years. Go with me to Jeremiah chapter 25. Jeremiah 25. All you people that love prophecy, get ready. Some of you start in Daniel and you don't even know this. Daniel, you want to know what's so great about Daniel? He studied my man Jeremiah's works. Jeremiah 25, verse 11. "This whole land shall be a ruin and an astonishment. these nations shall serve the king of Babel 70 years. And it will come to pass when 70 years are accomplished that I will punish the king of Babel and that nation, says Jehovah, for their iniquity in the land of the Kasdim, and will make it an everlasting desolation. He sees that 70 years are determined. Interesting. Go with me to Daniel. I just want to show you this. Many of you probably know this, but just in case you don't, you should have this. Daniel 9. Daniel the wisest. You say, Daniel is the wisest. What do you read, Daniel? I read Jeremiah. Daniel 9, verse 1. In the year, the first year of Daryavesh, the son of Ahasuerus of the seed of Madai, who was made king over the realm of the Chaldeans in the first year of his reign, I, Daniel, considered in the books the number of the years whereof the word of Jehovah came to Jeremiah the prophet that he would accomplish 70 years in the desolations of Jerusalem. Then it says he sets his face to know and so forth. Now go down to verse 11. You need this too. Let's go ahead and start in verse 9. Boy, it's hard to pick a place to. To Jehovah our God belong mercy and forgiveness, for we have rebelled against him. For we've not obeyed the voice of Jehovah our God to follow his Torah, which he set before us by his servants the prophets. Yea, all Israel have transgressed your Torah and have turned aside so as not to obey your voice. Remember, Jeremiah often said that too. He said, I didn't command sacrifices when I brought you out of the land of Egypt, but I commanded you this, obey my voice. Interesting. That's another topic. But therefore, the curse is poured upon us, and the oath that is written in the Torah of Moses, the servant of God, which because we've sinned against him. You see, what he's saying is that the oath, the desolations that are on them comes from the Torah of Moses, as it was said. He has confirmed his word, verse 12, which he spoke against us and against our judges who judge us by bringing upon us a great evil from under the whole heaven. There has not been done the like of which has been done against Jerusalem, as it is written in the Torah of Moses. All this evil has come upon us. Yet we did not offer our prayer before Jehovah our God that we might turn from our iniquities and understand your truth. And it goes on. The prophets recognized that the pronouncements that were coming against them, Jeremiah in particular recognized that the bad which was coming was based upon the curses or the consequences from the scroll that Moses wrote. Jeremiah's teaching, as you'll see, is based solidly on the words of the Moses scroll. He saw within these words the end and a new beginning as well. He knew that the people of Jerusalem and of the land would be driven out among the nations. But he also knew that from there, they would be returning. From the nations where they were driven, they would be gathered back. I began with a prophecy in Jeremiah chapter 16, and I want you to go with me to that place, Jeremiah 16. Because just as Jeremiah saw the downfall of his people, he saw a great revival, a return. Look at 16, verse 15. Remember, no longer it's going to be said, the Lord lives who brought the children of Israel out of the land of Egypt. That phrase occurs 7 times in Scripture, in Exodus and Numbers, never in Deuteronomy. Notice what he says. But this is what there's in Yamim Baim, in days to come, this will be the oath. As Jehovah lives, that brought up the children of Israel from the land of the north and from all the lands into which he had driven them, and I will bring them back into their land that I gave to their fathers. Where's Jeremiah get this? First of all, to say that no longer will people even swear an oath based on the God who brought the children of Israel up from the land of Egypt, which, by the way, is the very way that he made himself known to the world. To suggest that that won't even be spoken, and then it's not going to be spoken because we're going to make an oath to the one who brought from the north and countries where he had driven them. Where is Jeremiah getting that? From the scroll of Moses. Go with me to Deuteronomy chapter 30. Deuteronomy 30. In verse 1. And it shall come to pass, when all these things are come upon you, the blessings and the curse, which I have set before you, and you shall call them to mind among all the nations into which Jehovah your God has driven you. He goes on. I don't want to read all of Deuteronomy 30 yet, so I'm having to make myself stop, but I want you to get this. This word, though driven, the root word, nun, dalet, chet, in relation to the children of Israel being driven into other nations, that word only occurs in one book of the Pentateuch, Deuteronomy. Doesn't appear in Genesis in any form, or Exodus, or Leviticus, or Numbers, in Deuteronomy. Only in Deuteronomy do we get an idea that God is going to bring his people from all the lands into which he has scattered them and driven them. Look at verse 4. Deuteronomy 30, verse 4. If your outcast, by the way, the Hebrew there is the same root word, nun, dalet, chet. Those driven ones. If your driven out ones be at the utmost parts of heaven, from there will Jehovah your God gather you, and from there will he fetch you, and Jehovah your God will bring you into the land which your fathers possessed, and you shall possess it, and so forth and so on. Jeremiah said that this, when this happens, it's going to be so great that people will then swear, Jehovah Chai, who brought the children of Israel up out of the land of the north and out of all the lands in which he gathered them. Imagine if you were in a group of people who were just brought back from all the lands and someone said, Jehovah lives who brought the children of Israel out of the land of Egypt. I imagine every face would turn and say, yeah, but Jehovah lives who brought the children of Israel up out of the land of the north and all the nations into which, not just Egypt. You see? As it turns out, the Moses scroll is the source of Jeremiah's prophecies of a fateful end, as well as the prophetic words about a new and glorious beginning. This prophecy in Jeremiah 16 mentions swearing, right? They shall no longer swear, Jehovah lives, and so forth. He even lets us know how that's done. It's in Hebrew, to swear in the name of Jehovah is done in this way. I wrote a paper called Swearing by the Name. I highly recommend you read it because it's based on what we're talking about here. It's a lost art. It's a lost biblical command. Do you know that the Torah commands making an oath? Go with me. Look at Deuteronomy chapter 6. Deuteronomy chapter 6 and verse 13. And it says, you shall fear Jehovah your God and serve him, and you shall swear by his name. You shall swear by his name. How do you do that? Jehovah Chai is swearing by his name. It's used over and over. Read my article. You'll see it's used by common people in the Bible. It's used by prophets, by kings, by women, by men, by maidservants, and so forth. Because it is the ultimate of assuring truth. Now, we've grown in the habit of saying, no. First of all, many people say you can't even pronounce the name, let alone swear by it. Look at Deuteronomy chapter 10, Deuteronomy 10, verse 20. This is just a point to tie together a couple of things that I brought up. 10:20, him you shall serve, to him you shall hold fast, and swear by his name. Now, if you don't read Deuteronomy, you won't know this, because nowhere else in the five books does it give a command to swear in the name. But Jeremiah was working off of a script. He read the scroll of Moses. Go with me to Jeremiah chapter 4. Part of his understanding of what it would take to bring about the redemption, Jeremiah chapter 4. Let's just begin in verse 1. He's trying to educate the people about what it's going to take to bring about a return. Notice in verse 1, if you will return, O Israel, says Jehovah, return to me. And if you will put away your abominations out of my sight without wavering and will swear as Jehovah lives, Jehovah Chai, in truth, in judgment, and in righteousness, then the nations shall bless themselves in him, and in him they shall glory. He's suggesting, he's openly stating, Jehovah is, that if they will learn to swear in his name, in truth, in justice, and in righteousness, then, notice, then, this is the Abrahamic plan, then nations will bless themselves in him. See, Jehovah is critical. He said, the people know how to swear in the name of Baal. These prophets and priests have taught them all sorts of things to do that aren't biblical. But Jeremiah is working off of a script. Jeremiah saw the worst of days in the history recorded in the Bible. He saw them, get this, before they happened. He had to see them twice. He was studying the words of a scroll. He said, when your scroll was found, I ate it. He had the words of Jehovah in his mouth, words that prophesied the downfall and words that prophesied the great return, the building and planting. So he had to see the words twice, once in the scroll and once as they were enacted before his very eyes. He watched as they came to pass, but he also saw in the same scroll words that predicted better days. Jeremiah would call them Yamim Baim. Josiah was now dead. If I were writing it down, I would say, Josiah, my servant, is dead. the work would fall solely to a priest from Anatot now, a prophet like Moses by the name of Jeremiah ben Hilkiah. Going forward, I will show you in great detail how Jeremiah, with the word of Jehovah and the words of the Moses scroll, declared the end and a new beginning. When they were found, Jeremiah ate them. And by the way, along the way, as he worked his way through the script of the Moses scroll, Jeremiah penned his own scroll. A scroll which, as I will show, is the greatest literary work of all time. I call that scroll the New Covenant scroll of Jeremiah. But for that, you have to join me next week. Shabbat Shalom, Shavua Tov, Chag Sameach, make some noise. And for those of you who follow the Jewish calendar, Happy New Year. Mm-hmm.